This episode of The Orb is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform for creating a blog, website, portfolio, or an online store. Create your own space today by visiting squarespace.com and use offer code TREK9 to save 10%. And also by TrekFan, where you'll explore new places, learn new things, and collaborate with other fans to solve puzzles, complete real-life mission objectives, and win great prizes. Put your love for Trek into action by visiting TrekFan.org and help us move the world one step closer to the Star Trek future. Plus, if you'd like to support our programming personally, visit trek.fm/donate to get our new alien badges and art prints featuring original illustration by Tobu Ushi.
This is J.G. Hertzler, General Martok on Deep Space Nine, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome, Niners, to another episode of The Orb, our dedicated Star Trek Deep Space Nine show. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me, as he is every week, is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing. Matthew, it looks like you're hanging out on the promenade today, because that's quite a menagerie you've got behind you there.
It is, Chris. It's really nice here on the promenade. I was luckily able to find a quiet corner of the Replimat, and I've got my decaf Arachtogeno, because, you know, it's a little later here than it is there in Tokyo, and so trying to be able to go to bed on time tonight. But I just love the promenade at this time of night. It's really nice.
Yeah, it is nice. And how do you take your Arachtogeno? You know, do you like the Jack O'Rion pill like Sisko does, or?
You know, honestly, I just like my Arachtogeno straight up. I don't like any frills in it. I'm not an O'Brien man where double strong, double sweet Jamaican blends, coffee. I just like my Arachtogeno unfettered. You know, nothing inside of it. Just the pure coffee. And in fact, I wonder. We have pure Kona coffee. You know, which everybody loves. You know, it's very expensive. It's delicious. I wonder what the Klingon version of that is. You know, what island on Kronos does, you know, that rare blend of Arachtogeno come from?
I think it's probably Krona coffee.
Oh, Krona. Yeah, there you go. Man, I should have thought of that. Goodness, but
so
yeah.
When you walk into the Kronos Starbucks and you order your Arachtogeno, you order it warrior style.
Then. Exactly.
That's just straight up Arachtogeno. No frills. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, they say it puts hair on your chest. It hasn't yet, but we'll see.
All right. Well, we're going to talk about the menagerie today, not the original series episode, but the wide assortment of aliens that we see on Deep Space Nine. And Matthew, I've chosen some alien races from the show, and you've chosen some, and as we do when we talk about episode picks, we have not shared with each other which alien races we've picked. Now, I'm sure that we've got some overlap here. I've picked a couple that maybe you didn't pick, so let's see how it goes. What's the first alien race from Deep Space Nine that you want to talk about today?
You know, Chris, the first one that I picked was actually the Trill. And What I liked about what Deep Space Nine, what it does with the Trills, you know, they're only on the Next Generation once. So they kind of created a very interesting race, one that, you know, you were intrigued by. And I definitely hoped to kind of learn more about. And then, of course, Deep Space Nine takes the Trill and just explodes what it means to be a Trill. They do a couple of things. One was they obviously changed what it looks like, you know, to be a Trill.
Right.
I was reading today that obviously that was mainly cosmetic. It had nothing to do with, they didn't care about explaining it. It didn't matter. They really just did it because they saw the makeup on Terry Farrell and were like, you've turned a beautiful woman into not a beautiful woman.
Doing the prosthetic stuff that they were going to do originally, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Just give her spots. And so, will be one of the major changes that we see. But really, too, Deep Space Nine did a great job of just kind of diving in and giving us what it meant to be a Trill, since this is a society that had prided itself and was very secretive about itself because of the way other species would respond to the idea of this symbiotic relationship and everything. And I just honestly, I find it a fascinating alien race. You know, the idea that you have a symbiont that lives inside of you, the idea that you have all these different lifetimes. So it's a little bit like a, you know, it's almost like reincarnation in some ways, you know, because each iteration adds to it, except you actually get the opportunity to remember completely what happened in that past lifetime. And so it's just to me, great sci-fi idea. And Deep Space Nine really just took that and ran with it.
Yeah, they really did. It was an interesting idea set up by TNG, but I'm glad that they did explore it and they fleshed it out. And what's interesting about the Trill to me, apart from Dax herself being on the show, is that they did at different points through the series take the time to actually develop the background of the culture and the society a bit. And obviously it wasn't fleshed out in the way that the Bajorans were. But if you think about one thing we often talk about with the Vulcans, for example, is we had to wait until Enterprise to actually really learn about Vulcan culture, right, and Vulcan society, other than just the kind of just momentary glimpses that we were able to get a little bit in the films and not even really in TNG. I mean, you think maybe like Sarek coming on or a little right. bit about how the Vulcans and the Romulans were going to unify, but we really didn't learn very much. And the Trill were certainly a race where you could have just had a character, like one character that was this race, and then forget about it and only focus on that character. So it's fun for me that they actually did let us see what another very different type of society is like and
right.
how it operates, how the rules are. And of course, as we learn in the end, the rules are there in a way to kind of stymie the population a little bit, which was kind of an unusual twist.
Well, and it was really neat too, because, you know, it was one of the few times where they didn't portray every single Trill as being the same, you know.
Right.
They all had individual dress. They didn't all act the same. They were all very unique, very different. It felt like one of the most vibrant races that Star Trek had created, because you know Cardassians all tend to wear the same clothes. You know, they all tend to look the same, act the same in a lot of ways. Klingons for the longest time were the same way. Romulans, I mean, all of these races, and you know, even it seems like sometimes even the Vorta had more personality to them and differences to them than some of these other races that we'd seen for the longest time. And
that's true.
And so Trill, I thought was really fascinating, because every time you saw one, they weren't just like Dax, you know?
They were a lot more human, right? They had very different personalities.
Right.
From Trill
right.
to Trill.
And maybe it was just easier to do their costuming too, because it wasn't ridiculously extravagant or anything. It was, like you said, it's kind of just very human almost like.
Well, you know, it's not extravagant at all. Sometimes all you need is a towel.
If you're Janzia, or Ezri, I'm not going to be choosy.
Matthew's still holding on for that Ezri towel scene.
I am, Chris. I don't understand why I can't have it.
All right. Well, let's move to another race, and I'm just going to pick up on one that you just mentioned, which is the Vorta. Now, these are the drug-dealing, purple-eyed clones with a poor sense of taste. And by taste, I don't mean their fashion sense. I mean their actual ability to taste food. The Vorta are an interesting creation for me as well, because they are a bit different than other aliens that we had seen in Star Trek up to that point. They have their own little back history of their how they came into existence, which I thought fit into Deep Space Nine quite well, because it's kind of a myth that they have been passing through about their own creation, the idea that they lived in the forest and they were these little kind of short ape-like creatures who lived in the trees, and then a changeling came along and they helped that changeling, and as a thank you, the founders genetically modified the Vorta and made them the masters of the Dominion's empire, essentially reporting directly to the founders. And I have to feel, what do you think about the Vorta? Do you think that the Vorta were created by the founders, actually created, like they didn't exist before and the Vorta simply created them? Or do you think that they were a race, not necessarily ape-like tree dwellers as they believe, but that they were just some humanoid race that the founders came and modified for their own purposes?
That's a really good question. I honestly never even thought to question the Vorta's idea of their own existence and whether or not it was, you know, just a story. And it just, you know, it actually seems like to me that it was something that would be true, because the founders really like to have people think they're gods so they can control them, right? You know, and for them, I feel like to take this race and then change them and make them something different, what better way to really kind of get their loyalty than that? So I don't know. That's a good question. I don't really know if there's a great answer. I think at either side, you could definitely, you know, say one way or the other. It could just be something that's made up and that they really were just some sort of primitive humanoid race, or that they really were these kind of like primate type things that were taken and created into something else. So I think either one honestly makes it really interesting.
It does make it interesting. I've always taken it as sort of a creation myth, like we have on Earth, where we have the debate over whether we evolved from, you know, primordial ooze, I guess as Q would put it, or whether we were created. But we have these stories in every culture and different periods of our history as well, and we always have different gods that are at the top of those stories of how we got here. And I've taken it kind of that way. And the thing about the Vorta is that if the changelings came in, if the founders came in and they manipulated an existing race, and remember that they can be cloned as well. And how do you do that if you go into a race that exists already and you start genetically manipulating them, you start changing their sense of hearing, their sense of taste, smell? Some of them have special powers, like Eris had, to be able to like shoot energy, kind of a telekinetic energy thing. If there were millions of them, do you modify them all? Do you kill off most of them and you have like a couple of breeding stock and then you move forward? It raises a lot of interesting questions.
Right. Yeah, I think you're right. I think that's a really cool thing that I had not really thought of why they would be cloning. And so it seems like they had taken almost the best specimens from that race, genetically changed them, and then would just clone them because, you know, it's easier. It's easier for control too.
Right. Yeah. And that's why I wonder if they simply created them from scratch as beings to serve them. So
yeah, that's a good call.
It's interesting. Well, who else do you have on your list today, Matthew?
You know, Chris, it's a little obvious, I think, maybe, to do this one. But, you know, for me, one of the things that I loved about Deep Space Nine was the fact that, and I kind of mentioned this a little bit before when I was talking about the Trill, but the Klingons. I really loved that we brought Worf on in the season four. I know that, as you had mentioned before on the show, it was a big debate among fans of whether or not this was going to ruin the show or, you know, all of those kind of things. But it turned out to be a really great thing for the Klingons because, you know, Ronald D. Moore had done such a great job of kind of helping us get a lot of great Klingon stuff on TNG. But as we've discussed before, they were kind of a very monolithic society. Yeah, they're all very much the same. We very seldom saw Klingons that weren't all kind of very similar to each other, not a lot of variety. And, you know, then we through this, you know, Kern came back as Worf's brother, kind of giving us that Klingon who could just never seem to get things right. We got to get Alexander back. I mean, it took Deep Space Nine to give Worf, you know, a relationship with his son that actually meant something, which I thought was great, seeing that kind of relationship there. And then for me, you know, the Klingon of all Klingons to me is Martok. And
yeah, me too.
And so having that character come on and really portray what it meant to be just kind of a normal, everyday Klingon who had greatness basically thrust upon them, I thought was a really fascinating thing to see. He also got to see Klingon women too. Grilka, not your everyday typical Klingon woman, which we had seen before. You know, the women seemed to have a little bit more variety to them than the men, you know, because Kalar was a lot different. And then, of course, you had your prototype Klingon woman in Martok's wife, which, you know, nobody likes her. There's a derogatory Targ name out there in Klingon language, but we're not allowed to say on this show because it's so offensive. But that's what she's kind of known as under Martok's breath every once in a while.
She was an interesting character, most definitely. Yeah, and then we had Lursa and Bator.
Exactly.
And also, you know, on the Ready Room this coming week, it'll be the day after this orb when it drops, we did Matter of Honor, and you see two female Klingon women there on the Klingon ship with Riker, and they are also, I guess that was, I think, the first time we ever saw Klingon women, other than, like, Valkris,
right,
which, you know, in Star Trek 3, which is really not, it's just completely different in that case.
Yes, yes. So I just loved the fact that, and two, what obviously made it great to have the Klingons on Deep Space Nine was the fact that Ronald D. Moore obviously is writing on the show and getting to add to what he had already done in TNG, but had that broader canvas that Deep Space Nine allowed him to really kind of dive in deep to Klingon culture,
right,
in a way that just expanded on what he had been doing. You know, it wasn't like TNG had done Klingons bad at all. That was one of the few things I think that
it set them up very
exactly.
Well.
Exactly. Yeah. So this just really got to flesh it out even more.
Right, because the thing with TNG is the style of storytelling, the episodic nature of that show meant that all you could really do is get a snapshot of a race. And so the Klingons, in order to facilitate the stories that they were telling on TNG, really had to be the Klingons that we think of every time we think of Klingons. Whereas on DS9, because they became involved in the war and it was an ongoing thing, they were able to introduce individuals like Martok who would be around all the time.
Right.
And we can really explore the culture a lot more. So, yeah, I had not thought about including the Klingons just because they are on every series. But DS9 is where the Klingons get the most development, no doubt. Okay, well, I'm going to take things in a fun direction for a minute, Matthew. Now, before the show, I sent you a link to a YouTube video. And I asked you to watch this video before we recorded, and then I would explain to you why on the show.
You did, Chris, and I am sitting on the edge of my seat waiting to understand why you sent me this very, very strange video.
Okay, the reason I sent you that video, Matthew, and for those listening, the video is for New Order's True Faith, the song and the video from the 1980s. This video was apparently the inspiration, I think, for an alien race that appears on Deep Space Nine. And can you guess, after watching that video, who I might be talking about?
Oh, goodness. You know, I was watching the video and I'm looking through to see, you know, if I could see anything. And I don't...
I'll give you a hint.
Okay.
They're the winemaking.
Oh, yes.
Wrestling inspired aliens of the Gamma Quadrant, yes, who mean business.
The Dosi. Yes, yes, yes. Okay. Okay. Now I know what you're talking about.
The Dosi. That's right. So it's a loose connection, but if you look at those outfits, yes, and you look at like the little skull cap hats they've got on, and the only difference is that the Dosi, they don't dance quite the same way as these really unusual looking guys, you know, in the True Faith video, dude.
Yeah, you know, thank the Lord that they don't. I was a little worried. Yeah, you know, watching the video, I mean, folks, you know, if you go find the video, maybe Chris will just post it here in the show notes so you can go check it out. You might worry about Chris's sanity after watching the video, as I was. But this connection does make sense. That, yes, that was a really interesting, strange, I mean, of all the races we get in Deep Space Nine, that's one of the most TOS-ish races that you see. I mean, just their makeup, yeah, their ridiculous outfits, their attitude.
It's interesting that you say that. Well, first of all, just so everyone knows where it came from, I was clued into this connection by toplessrobot.com,
okay,
and their article from last year called The 20 Lamest Looking Aliens from the Various Star Trek Series. So I'll put a link to that in the show notes as well. But now it's interesting that you say that, Matthew, because I actually think that they're more like a Voyager alien. Because Voyager really, because they're encountering new alien races every week, they just tended to come up with some of the weirdest looking aliens. And the Dosi, for me, kind of fit into that category. Maybe the Dosi are who Seven should have been wrestling.
Yes.
Because they're kind of like quasi lucha libre guys. Right.
Right.
Those
right.
masks and the face paint on and everything.
Yeah.
So that they is are crazy strange. Looking. But they're also an interesting race because they only appear in one episode. However, they are a bridge between the Federation and the Dominion, because they are responsible for connecting Quark with the Karema.
Yes.
And the Karema were part of the Dominion, and the Karema began trading with the Federation, and the Ferengi became the middlemen between the Federation and the Karema. And the Karema, besides the various different products that they traded, they also made weapons that were installed on the Jem'Hadar ships. So they were really kind of in tight with the Dominion. And it's sort of one of those early threads that leads you into the whole encounter between the Dominion and the Federation,
right,
which of course launches the entire series forward.
Yeah, it really does. And I think that that's, you know, there are a lot of times where that happens in Deep Space Nine, where something that you think it could be throwaway turns out to be something important, you know. So when they were, especially when they were working on that Dominion storyline, you could tell that they were definitely plotting this out, you know, that they were slowly kind of revealing who this enemy was. And in a lot of the same ways, I think that you know, the fear of the Borg really mounts in TNG until you get to the best of both worlds, you know. But on Deep Space Nine, they took, I think, that just even a step further. They really just, it seemed very deliberate how they were trying to roll the Dominion out. And then they get thrown a little bit of curveball when Worf has to come on and the Klingons, but they just use that to their advantage and continue. It almost seems seamlessly as if this was always part of the plan. Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain.
Exactly. Especially if he's dressed like a Dosi.
Exactly.
It'd be hard to ignore him, but just don't,
you know,
pay attention to him.
Yeah, it would be really hard. So
these guys are quite interesting to me. So I had to throw them out there as one of the fun one-off aliens that we see on DS9. So what do you have next, Matthew?
Well, Chris, you know, I've got a list here, and man, I just feel like yours is funnier than mine. It's better than mine, because I just was thinking of some of the biggest aliens. And for me, this was one that I had to mention just because it's the Ferengi. And,
yeah,
you know, they...
I thought about putting them on my list as well.
Yeah, you know, And mainly because they went from being a race that nobody could stand on the Next Generation to being a race that so many people love now because of Deep Space Nine. And, you know, not everybody loves the Ferengi still. A lot of people still kind of groan when a Ferengi episode comes on. But I think that one of the things that really helped me enjoy the Ferengi was, again, Deep Space Nine took this race and recreated them, and then also had their Ferengi characters not all be cookie cutters. You know, Quark and Rom and Nog. Those three alone are completely different characters. And just the way that they interacted and all of that, I think, was so interesting for the show. And it really helped make that a vibrant race that you actually wanted to see more of, I thought. And then, of course, you know, you had all the side characters, Brunt and the Grand Nagus and Moogie, and, you know, all of these Ferengi are very different, and it created a sense of a reality to the race, I thought. And so, yeah, I was just always glad that they took that race that just obviously did not work on TNG, especially the new big baddies. You know,
that's the thing, is that to think about the fact that they were originally intended to be the big bad arch nemesis of Picard and the Enterprise and the Next Generation, and then after that, just complete failure in The Last Outpost to establish them as such. They, you know, they appear again. They kind of, there's somewhat comic relief on TNG as well, but they're very much just a cookie cutter kind of a one trick pony on TNG.
Yeah.
And then we do get Ferengi 2.0 on DS9. Now, I still think more fans... I think you're right that there are a lot of fans who warmed up to the Ferengi on DS9. I do think there are a lot more fans who still don't like the Ferengi. And I hear from lots of fans who just skip Ferengi episodes on DS9. And I think it's too bad because... Now, there are a few bad Ferengi episodes on DS9.
Yes.
But there are a lot of good Ferengi episodes on DS9. And Quark is actually a very three-dimensional character. And he grows tremendously through the series, as does Rom and as does Nog. And you really shouldn't skip the Ferengi episodes because they're important to how Quark interacts with everyone else on the show and other episodes as well.
Yeah.
So definitely the Ferengi are a Deep Space Nine race, even though they were born on TNG.
Chris, what have you got next for us? I'm curious after that last pick and the video that went along with it. I don't know if I should ask.
Well, I'll tell you what. I will hold off on the next one on my list for a moment, and I'll jump back to the top of my list. And let's just talk about the Jem'Hadar for a moment, because the Jem'Hadar, what I want to know from you is, who's more frightening in the Star Trek world? The Borg, the Jem'Hadar, the Hirogen, the Klingons? When you think about these big, tough villains, these kind of warrior races that you have to go up against, who do you feel is the most frightening? Is it the Jem'Hadar?
This is a tough call because, you know, the Borg as an entity is just super scary.
Yeah.
But at the same time, there's something about an army that's not completely autonomous. I mean, they're not automatons just, you know, following one direct order. I mean, they do have a sense of will to them. And that they are all bred to kill and do it in the most efficient, brutal ways. And they have no remorse over it. That's freaky to me. I mean, that's really scary. And you know, because they just keep coming and they keep coming and they keep coming, they're able to learn. They're able to adapt. They're you know, when it comes to being a warrior, you know, they're not just fodder. I think that when I think of some of the scariest races in Star Trek, for me, at least in the top two or three, is always the Jim Hadar. And honestly, yeah. I don't know if they're not number one, the race I would least like to battle.
Right. I think it's hard to say for sure, like, who's number one, who's number two. The thing about the Jim Hadar is that they are intelligent, sentient beings, and I can't necessarily say that about the Borg, because a Borg drone alone is really not a threat to you. A Borg drone by itself is, you can take it out, you can disable it. It's a lot harder to take out or disable a single Jim Hadar.
Right.
And although the Borg can adapt, they're doing it as essentially a computer. You know, it's this one hive mind that is essentially like a giant computer. And so it is easier, I think, to deal with the Borg than it is the Jim Hadar. The Jim Hadar are just ruthless. They can breed more and more and more. You know, the Borg have to assimilate individuals. The Jim Hadar, they don't have to assimilate anyone. They are just bred. They just grow more of them. And that's, it's difficult. You think about the Dominion War. I mean, if it weren't for the prophets, the Jim Hadar probably would have won the Dominion War, because they could simply overwhelm the Federation, and you couldn't come up with some solution like putting them to sleep, for example.
Yeah, this is, it's definitely not a race that you want to face. And I thought it was interesting too. I mean, even the changelings, they have done everything they can to be able to control what they've created. You know, they don't want to have created a Frankenstein that, you know, will get out of control. So having the Vorta, who control the Jim Hadar with the white and everything like that, you know, breeding into them the genetic code of that they're viewed as gods, all these things to really safeguard themselves, because they know what they're creating, which is something that could go horribly wrong if they, you know, make a mistake. I think that's a really interesting thing that ends up happening with the Jim Hadar and you know, the founders in general. And again, makes them really scary, because they are this controllable, unstoppable force. And as we saw on the show, there are very few anomalies in that, which is also rare in Star Trek to have that few anomalies throughout their ranks. And so, yeah, it's this is not a race that I think anybody wanted to ever have to deal with in the Federation.
Right. And I see parallels with the Borg as well in the idea of, be careful what you create.
Right.
Because you don't know what your creation's going to do. With the Borg, of course, it's the fear of technology and, you know, what we're doing today, where we are, you know, incorporating artificial elements into our bodies.
Right.
And where does that lead us? And the dangers it leads to something like the Borg, or parallels with Battlestar Galactica with the Cylons. Mm-hmm. You know, that's again something where you create a machine, you give it some form of intelligence, and ultimately it comes back to bite you. And here with that's what's happening to the Founders too, right? You get Jim Hadar who do rebel. You get Jim Hadar who do try to find a way to break free from their creators and their guides. And the other thing that is interesting about the Jim Hadar is, when we look at DS9 and we look at the religious elements of the show, we have the Bajorans who believe the prophets are their guides. And here on the other side of the galaxy in the Gamma Quadrant, you've got kind of the same thing, where the Jim Hadar see the Founders as guides. But whereas the prophets are trying to protect the Bajorans, you've got the Founders who are trying to control the Jim Hadar, and doing it through drug addiction.
Yeah, it's the kind of symmetry that you get in Deep Space Nine with the races, and just how each one kind of interacts within itself is very interesting. And how they it seems like, really, kind of in the end, all the races in Star Trek tend to be variations on the themes, and they're really all the themes that we are, and things that we as human beings tend to either be scared of or have tried before and they haven't worked, or we've thought that they might work. So we kind of play them out in a race, and it gives you that ability to kind of see it play out to its most logical conclusion or its craziest conclusion and all that. So I think it's one of those neat things of where Star Trek really collides with philosophy and helps us be able to kind of know ourselves better as we look at these different races that we've created in some ways to kind of help us understand our own selves better.
Exactly. Okay, well, who else do you have on your list?
Well, Chris, let's see. What do I want to do here? I think, Chris, I think I'll go with the last one that I want to talk about, because we just talked about the Jem'Hadar. I want to talk about this because I think it's really important, is the Founders themselves. Because this kind of enigma of the Founders and how they, you know, they're all the ocean, but they're all a drop, and how that all works still kind of boggles my mind. This idea that they are separate, they can become separate beings, and yet really they are all part of the whole, and they feel kind of incomplete without the whole. I don't know. I guess maybe that's supposed to be the metaphor for how we are as humans. Like, we feel we are autonomous beings, but we feel incomplete without other people, you know, and so that pull that we have where we want to be our own person, but we also want to be a part of the group, and that there's always that struggle. I don't know. Maybe that's what they were going for. But to me, that was always a really fascinating thing to see. And I always kind of wished that we had gotten a little bit more of changelings. You know, we got Odo, we got Loss, and then we obviously had the female changeling. But we never saw any other changelings. And, you know, they would be the ones that would be the bad guy of the week, you know. But you didn't really get to know them. They were just, you know, the person in Homefront who's, you know, trying to disrupt Starfleet or whatnot. So it would have been, I think, interesting, and it may be a lost. Maybe they wanted them to be more of a mystery. I don't know. I just wish we had gotten just more of what it meant to be a changeling, a shapeshifter, and their history, their background, all of those kind of things, because it's really fascinating to me.
Right. We got a few more changelings, but they were in the form of other characters, right?
Right.
So they were playing.
Well, like the changeling that plays Bashir. Yeah.
So, but yeah, I mean, I think what you say about the possible purpose of the Founders and the changelings is good, and probably it works for me, especially with Odo, because, you know, Odo is that guy who is, I mean, he has his own identity in a way. And he charts his own life, but he really, really longs to know where he came from, and he longs to be part of the group.
Yes.
And so that's a good analogy there. I think that what I miss about the Founders is that I would like to know more about why they have such a problem with the solids. You know, we understand, like, they're fearful of them and all, but really, really explore kind of the history of that culture, because we know so much about Cardassian culture and Bajoran culture in DS9. We learn a lot more about Klingon culture. I would like to know more about the Dominion and more about the history of the Founders and what really led to this.
Agree. That I would definitely like to know more about that. I think it would be fascinating to be able to see that. And it's a little disappointing that they just never gave that to us.
Yeah, they had so much going on. I guess it was another storyline that they couldn't quite fit in. And you would have had a series of stories about the history of the Founders world.
Yes,
or something. So,
I guess that's true. That is one thing about Deep Space Nine, is they definitely tried to stay within the framework of what they're trying to tell overall, and not just, you know, oh, today we're going to give you the history of the Founders story. So
yeah. So there is that. All right. Well, I have one more on my list that I want to just get your thoughts on real quick. Tell me what you think about these guys. Now, everyone knows in J.J. Abrams' Star Trek that the Romulans have facial tattoos everywhere. What you may not know is that was inspired by Deep Space Nine, because before the J.J. Romulans made tattoos cool, the Wadi really rocked the face paint. And besides tattoos in the Abrams verse, the Wadi gave us something else, a wonderful gift for Star Trek fans What would that be, Matthew?
It would be the fantastic game that they created, Move Along Home.
That's right.
Yes.
And the song Alla Moraine.
I know. You know, it's funny because Kate is going to be so excited to hear us be talking about the Wadi and their fantastic game. You know, Chris, I don't really have a lot to say about the Wadi.
Neither do I. I just wanted to throw them out there.
Exactly.
Because
they are probably the most hated race ever created on Star Trek. Because they are, for most people, the most hated thing about Deep Space Nine ever. Because it's also considered to be the worst episode of Deep Space Nine ever.
Right.
Except for maybe Prophet and Lace. It's a toss-up.
That's got the Bosom Buddies connection. There,
it so. Does. It does. It still makes me want to hurl. So anyway.
Well, you know, the Wadi are the first and the worst aliens to ever come through the wormhole. And so that gives them a unique distinction in Deep Space Nine.
Very true. So we can always be grateful for that, that they were the first and the worst, and that they never came back.
However, you may think that the Wadi aren't tough, but in Star Trek Online, you can actually get Wadi duty officers for your Klingon Defense Force crew or your Federation crew. So apparently the Wadi, you know, they got a little more fight in them than we think. We think they're all fun and games, but maybe not.
Yeah, it's all fun and games until somebody gets their eye poked out with those dice.
That's right. All right, Matthew. Well, to close out the discussion here, I have a few awards to hand out.
Oh, excellent. Do they get badges?
They get badges. Okay. These are DS9 Alien Awards.
Excellent.
The first award is the Best Hairstyle Award. Now, do you have any idea, you know, who you would give a hairstyle award to? See if you have the same thought as me.
Hairstyle Award, Deep Space Nine Alien. Wow. You know, I think I might go with just Dabo Girls. Bajoran Dabo Girls.
That's a good one.
Those girls always had the most ridiculous, elaborate hair things that I've ever seen. They would have had to wake up 3 hours before work, you know, early in the morning just to get that done. Yeah. So I think I might go with them.
Okay. I like your answer. I like that one. I'm going to give the Best Hairstyle Award to two races. It's a tie. I'm going to give it to the Kalaren and the Talani from Armageddon Game.
Oh, God. so bad. So bad. goodness. Yeah. Whew.
If you remember, that's the episode where those two races had been fighting a war and they had used this terrible chemical weapon called the Harvester. And Miles and Jules get caught in the middle where they're trying to, you know, get rid of the stock of this weapon and such. And you can tell these races apart because one of them has one giant thing sticking up off of their head and the other race has two things sticking out. So there we go. Next award is the Ambiguity Award. Now, you're never going to guess who this is going to. The Ambiguity Award goes to the albino from Blood Oath.
I like it.
What was the albino? Was he a Klingon? Was he not a Klingon? You can never really quite tell just based on what you see on the screen.
This is true. You know, I always like to think that he is like some sort of mixed blood, strange kind of Klingon with something that they, you know, or a genetic Klingon experiment gone wrong kind of thing. And so, yeah, that's a good one. I like that. I think that's a great award.
Yeah, I like to think of it the same way you do. I think the intention in the writing was that he was just some other race. And so that's why I think he deserves the Ambiguity Award, because it's really confusing to the viewer as to what they were going for there. Okay, I've got two more awards. Next one is the Loquaciousness Award, which of course goes to the Lurians.
Oh, that would be Morn. Yes.
That's right.
That's right. You know, you could also give that award to Luxana, because every time she comes on, she is also very loquacious and never stops talking. So,
right. Except she talks on screen while Morn talks off screen.
That's right. That's right. Yes.
That's right. The last award. Tell me what you think about. You're going to like this one. This is the Chastity Award. The Chastity Award goes to the Tavnians, because the Tavnians, they do not tell their children that the other sex exists until they turn 16 years old. So one way to keep your children safe, one way, you know, to keep them from becoming promiscuous at a young age is to simply not let them know that another gender exists at all until they turn 16.
Definitely one way to go. Yeah. Now, once they find out, though, hate to think of what happens.
Well, you know, they've got that Tavnian wedding chamber, that box that they climb into, so it all builds up to that.
Oh, goodness.
All right. Well, those are the DS9 Alien Awards, and it's been an interesting discussion of aliens with you today, Matthew. But of course, this isn't the only thing we've been talking about this week here on Trek FM. We've talked about many topics, so here are some other things you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, The Orb.
Sacrifice of Angels.
Again, Dukat in his overconfidence. Should we have anybody go after him? No, fine.
Just let him go.
Yeah, we'll destroy him when he gets here.
The Ready Room.
Khan.
But because they had to do this convolution, and they don't, Kirk should have had a reaction to that being Khan. And when he says the name Khan, that should mean, he didn't say my name is Noonien, you know, he said Khan. And you would at least have a thing in your mind going, oh, genetically enhanced Khan, this has got to be the Khan.
To the journey!
The fight.
I'll never forgive you, listeners, for putting me through watching that again. Although this episode did give us the line, was your opponent firing some type of energy weapon at you? And then Chakotay goes, just his gloves. Commentary, Trek Stars.
Richard Matheson recap.
And my favorite chapter in the Matheson life is when he was hired by Rod Serling to work on The Twilight Zone, the first season of The Twilight Zone, because that is a fantastic moment in history where Rod Serling was creating something that would eventually become an incredibly important artifact of history.
Warp 5.
The Mako.
Well, the employment arrangements are actually relatively interesting to contemplate. You know, you've joked about whether they were contractors or not, but as you've stated, they are outside of Starfleet.
Trek News and Views.
7 of 9 day.
She was a bit overused, and it was a bit ridiculous some of the things her magical nanoprobes could do, but...
Literary Treks.
Mission's End.
The question is, do you feel like Section 31 is overused? Everyone wants to use Section 31, and so they just keep popping up in every story, and I think sometimes it does a disservice to the idea of Section 31.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of these shows. We have new Trek Talk for you every day of the week. Some days we even have two shows for you, and you'll find them on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Windows Phone, Xbox, Zune. You can stream or download files from the website. Many, many ways for you to get the shows. And you can find links to all this on our website at trek.fm/pd for podcast directory.
Just wanted to say thank you to the fan that left us a new 5-star rating on iTunes. We really appreciate that. Definitely helps people find us on the strange inner workings of iTunes and how people can find podcasts that they're interested in. So if you get a chance, go over, give us a rating, give us a review. We love to just hear what you're thinking about the show there. And like I said, it really does help people find the show. So we just appreciate everyone who has gone and done that for us. It means a lot that people would spend a little bit of time giving us a rating and then writing something up about it. We really do appreciate it.
Absolutely. We'd love to hear from you. And if you'd like to share your thoughts with us in writing, you can do that by going to trek.fm/contact. There is a form there. Choose The Orb, and that will come to Matthew and me by email. You can leave us a voicemail by going to any page on the site and clicking the tab you see on the right-hand side of a page. If you click that, a box will appear. You can use your webcam's microphone to record a voicemail, and from that box, you can upload it to us as an MP3 file. We also have forums. You can drop by there, trek.fm/forums. You can chat with other listeners, with the Trek FM crew about Deep Space Nine or anything about Star Trek you want to talk about. And then in social media, you'll find us on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm and on Twitter under username trekfm. Now, Matthew, when you're not painting your face up like a dosi and drinking some of that delicious, really delicious Tullaberry wine that they make, where can people find you?
Well, you can find me on Twitter at MattRushing02, tweeting about all sorts of different things there. You can find me doing literary treks with you, Chris, where we talk books and comics of the Star Trek universe, which is a lot of fun. And then, if you're interested, you can find me on my own personal blog at 42lifeinbetween.wordpress.com. Now, Chris, when you're not trying to win Best Hair Award on, you know, your just a normal everyday life, where can people find you?
Oh, yeah, I do spend a lot of time doing that. But when I'm not busy with that, you can find me on Twitter under username C. Brian Jones. That's the letter C and Brian with a Y. You can find me pretty much everywhere in social media under that same username. And I also have my own website at cbrianjones.com if you want to drop by there and see some things that I do that aren't related to Star Trek. And also, besides the shows that we do together, Matthew, you'll find me on Tuesdays on The Ready Room, where we talk about all five Star Trek series and other special topics. And we have hosts from all across the network with me. Often Matthew is there, and other special guests. And then on Fridays, I'm on Warp 5 with Kate Walsh, where we talk about Enterprise. Also, Matthew, before we let everyone go, we'd like to ask you to please support our sponsors for today's show. Your support of our sponsors is very important for making it possible for us to bring The Orb to you every week. First, there's Squarespace, the web's best hosting and CMS that makes it simple for you to create a beautiful blog, a website, a portfolio, an online store, really anything you can imagine. You know, maybe even a blog about the great hairstyles of Star Trek. I'd love for you to try it for free for 14 days. You can do that with no credit card required. Just go over to squarespace.com and get that free trial, and then use offer code TREK9 to save 10% off your lifetime purchase on new accounts. And if you choose the annual plan, you can also get a free custom domain registration as well. It's very easy to connect that with Squarespace. And we thank Squarespace for their support of The Orb. And we thank you for supporting Squarespace and helping us bring the show to you. Also, please drop by TrekFan.org. Now, this is not an ordinary Star Trek fan club. This is a great chance for you to come together with other fans to solve puzzles and complete real-life mission objectives. Plus, along the way, you can win great prizes. So turn your love for Star Trek into something that can really help us move the world towards that Star Trek future. Support us and TrekFan by visiting TrekFan.org. And we thank TrekFan for their support of The Orb as well. And lastly, if you would personally like to support what we're doing, you can go to trek.fm/donate. We have alien badges and art prints there. They're custom illustrations by Topa Ushi, who does all the artwork that you see on the website at trek.fm. And they're really nice 44mm badges or A5 size art prints. And you can mix and match what you want, badges and art prints, choose from the different contribution levels that are available. And your donations help us cover the cost of production, storage, and bandwidth that's needed to bring The Orb to you every week. We really thank you for your support of Trek FM, and you can find all this over at trek.fm/donate.
Thank you, everyone, for joining us, and we'll see you next time as we gaze into the orb.